Okay. So this is work done in part in collaboration with my student Bruno de Cunha. And there are a lot of things to discuss, including, I hope at the end, a little allegorical fable. And as we've seen at this conference, there are actually lots of theories of cosmology. No boundary, ekpyrotic, top-down, bottom-up, chaotically inflating, new, old, fast roll, slow roll, whatever. And debate about all of these theories is very likely to continue until we have enough control over the quantum theory of gravity to understand what the right theory is. And so in the absence of that theory, we might look to toy models for some sort of inspiration. And unfortunately, the situation is that toy models considered to date are what we might call no-scale models. That is, they throw out all space dimensions, and so all structure having to do with spatial scales, like horizon, structure formation, anything that we would really consider interesting in cosmology is thrown out. And so, in a sense, you might say the baby universe has been thrown out with the bathwater. So instead, we will look to 1+1 dimensional models in this talk, where we have both spatial scales and a toy renormalizable quantum theory of gravity. So most of what I'll be interested in are toy models of de Sitter space and inflation. And so the appropriate two-dimensional model of pure de Sitter space is the Liouville theory in 1+1 dimensions, whose equation of motion is gives you spaces of constant curvature. So for mu positive, you have de Sitter space, mu negative, anti-de Sitter space. And we'll be focusing on mu positive. Okay. Now, all two-dimensional metrics are rescalings of some reference metric up to reparameterization. And so in a gauge where we fix some reference metric and consider the variations of the scale factor, the equation R equals mu is just the Liouville equation, box phi is e to the phi. And that has a complete set of classical solutions, which were given by Liouville in the 19th century, in terms of a pair of left-moving and right-moving analytic functions. And so just for example, to get our feet wet, let's think about the functions A and B that give rise to homogeneous, spatially independent de Sitter cosmologies. So those choices are A is pure phase into the I, epsilon, x plus. A is just x plus, or a real exponential, what we might call elliptic, parabolic, and hyperbolic solutions. And if we plug those into the universal solution to the Liouville equation, we get the following scale factors, one which in finite conformal time emerge from infinite scale factor and return to infinite scale factor, those which take a while to get to infinite scale factor, and those which start off in, say, the far past, tau equals minus infinity at zero scale, and then blow up to infinite scale in the far at some finite time. And so drawing the what's going on in terms of dynamics in the exponential potential of the equation of motion, what we have is for de Sitter Liouville is essentially an exponential cliff, and the elliptic solutions are ones that come in from infinite scale, hit the wall of the cliff, and bounce back out in finite conformal time. Those are going to be global de Sitter solutions that undergo a de Sitter bounce. The parabolic solution are things that just gradually fall off the cliff and taking infinite conformal time to do so. And then the positive energy solutions, the hyperbolic solutions, are things that come out of a, say, come out of a big bang at small scale and then run out to an asymptotic de Sitter future. Now, each of these solutions, well, there is, if you like, a unique universal space of constant curvature, which is global De Sitter space. So each of these solutions that I've just written have to be some patch or piece of that global universal constant curvature two-dimensional surface. And so they're depicted here. The elliptic solution is some piece of the global De Sitter. So here what I've written is the conformal or Penrose diagram of two-dimensional De Sitter space. And the global solutions have the property that they just are some finite patch of that global solution. Parabolic solutions cover the usual half of global De Sitter space, and the hyperbolic ones that emerge out of a big crunch are essentially things that live in a future light cone of De Sitter space and have some kind of Milne singularity at the Big Bang. And so what I've indicated also are what we're going to do for the rest of this talk are consider closed two-dimensional cosmologies. So whereas if I let the spatial coordinate run from minus infinity to infinity, I get the whole shaded region. If I identify space to have a closed cosmology, I get the green region with the correspondingly indicated boundaries identified. Okay. Now, if we do that, if we work with a closed cosmology, then we're looking at a two-dimensional field theory on a spatial cylinder, a spatial circle, and so space-time diagram is topologically a cylinder. And so there's a Casimir energy in two dimensions if we couple to matter. And so that Casimir energy will shift the energy by some negative amount, which is based on how much central charge of matter we have. Okay. Now, being two-dimensional gravity, there's an alternate interpretation of what we're doing in terms of string theory, which is just the theory, the world sheet theory is just the theory of reparameterization and gauged reparameterization invariance in two dimensions. And so we can think of the Liouville theory coupled to some number C of matter fields as a string background. So if we take, say, the matter to just be free conformal fields, then we have a string background, which is a flat metric, linear dilaton, and some sort of closed string tachyon background. So if you like, we will think for some purposes of the cosmological constant term in two dimensions as a background in string theory that contains a closed string tachyon. And in this interpretation, the logarithm of the scale factor is the time in the string target space. And the spatial coordinates then play the role of some kind of massless conformal matter fields. And this is very similar, and what I'd like to do throughout the talk is to point out the very close parallel of this theory with the higher dimensional theory that we're after. And one of the parallels is that the scale factor here is has negative metric in its field space. So it's the usual, it'll exhibit some of the usual features of higher dimensional gravity. This little cartoon in the lower corner is to point out that this reinterpretation gives you a slightly different spin on various different of these classical solutions we just talked about. So that, for instance, this bounce solution, which thought of from the world sheet point of view in conformal time is some bounce going on. From the point of view of somebody sitting in the target space watching what's going on, you have essentially a pair of strings that emerge at some finite time and then run off to the future. So this is some sort of classical pair production of strings. And if I just go back for a moment to this picture, the string interpretation of these three classes of solutions is that these describe what are, from the string theory point of view, tachyons. These are massless strings, and these are massive strings. Okay. And we'll go on to discuss the quantum theory of pure De Sitter space in a moment, but just to give you an indication of what else we can do, I thought I would describe some variants that describe inflation. So if spatially, in target space, homogeneous tachyon is the pure cosmological constant for de Sitter-Liouville theory. Then if we just play around with that and introduce some coupling to matter degrees of freedom, we can write down anybody's favorite inflationary potential. And so just for purposes of illustration, I thought I would couple Liouville theory to Sein-Gordon matter theory. So the matter potential is just some cosine kx for some particular matter field x. And then in order to make this reparameterization invariant, we have to couple it to the appropriate exponential of the Liouville field, some appropriate gravitational dressing to make this reparameterization invariant. And so here's a cartoon of what the potential is doing. And just for orientation, remember that the scale factor is time-like, whereas the matter fields are space-like. And so they like to do opposite things in this potential. Phi likes to run uphill, whereas the matter fields like to run downhill. And so just to see what's going on, if we start off a matter field at small scale perched on top of the matter potential, while the matter field is trying to fall off the top of the potential, the scale factor is trying to run up the potential, and so that's inflation. And again, just to convince you that this is a very close model of higher dimensional cosmology, let's define what we would call the cosmological proper time related to conformal time by the scale factor. Then we can define the velocity of the scale factor, A dot over A. The matter potential is just this cosine kx. And so then we can write down both the equation of motion of the Liouville field, the equation of motion of the matter field, and the Hamiltonian constraint for the spatially homogeneous cosmologies that I was describing before. And they are exactly the the analogs in higher dimensions, the two-dimensional analog of the higher dimensional Friedmann equations of cosmology. So you see you have matter dynamics with the usual friction term, the usual evolution of the scale factor in terms of rho plus p of the matter, and this Hubble scale is fixed by the energy density of the matter. Okay, so as long as you're sitting on top of the matter potential and slowly rolling, dominated by friction, then you inflate in the usual way. And note that the thing that plays the role of Newton's constant in higher dimensions here is the Liouville coupling alpha, which determines the gravitational dressing of the matter potential and is fixed by the central charge. Okay. And so again, one can define the analogs of slow roll conditions, and you can see that they're very well satisfied if we choose a cosine potential for which the cosine is very slowly varying. So essentially what you want is the momentum k in the cosine has to be very small on the string scale, or at least on the scale that's set by the Liouville coupling alpha. Okay. And so, as I say, you can write down any potential and do whatever you want, and then the question is, to what extent can you solve the model? So at least at the classical level, if we are willing to bend the rules a little bit and consider eta not necessarily small, the theory can be made exactly solvable. That is, for k equals alpha, the Liouville potential e to the alpha phi cosine kx is just a sum of a complex exponential plus its complex conjugate. Similarly, the opposite sign kinetic term for phi and x is just the kinetic term for the complex field phi plus its complex conjugate. And so what we have for this particular choice of potential is just two copies of a complexified Liouville theory. So the theory is, again, classically exactly solvable. And so we can write down exactly the same full set of classical solutions that we had before. It's just that now A and B are left-moving and right-moving functions, which take generic arbitrary complex values. So just to illustrate the kinds of things that happen, consider the complexified version of the parabolic solution, where the field falls off the potential. And this is what it does. It indeed runs up, the scale factor runs up to large scale as long as you're on top of the potential. But gradually the field X falls off. And all eta not small means is that you can't ignore the acceleration term in the X equation of motion relative to the friction term. But otherwise, you have an exact classical solution, so what do you care? And so what happens is it falls down and then it climbs back up and goes back to small scale. Because once you're down at the bottom here, you're in anti-de Sitter space. And so running up the potential is running back to small scale. Okay. So, lots of time. So it's my hope that this sort of model will enable us to do some things in the quantum theory. If we can, you might hope that because the classical theory is an exactly solvable theory, that one can play the usual tricks in two-dimensional field theory and find an exact quantum theory. And so start to answer interesting questions. Maybe I'll just flash this up. There are various other variations of inflation which you can find analogs of here. So one other model that people have thought about is so-called topological inflation, where you look at a topological defect, and if the scale size of the topological defect is larger than the Hubble scale, then the interior core of the defect undergoes inflation. Well, we have Sein-Gordon theory. Sein-Gordon theory has topological solitons. So we can write down classical solutions where the winding of the phase of the fields A and B is the soliton number, and then write down some explicit classical solutions. And if you want to see what they do, plotting the scale factor here and sine of the spatial, the matter field here, you see this is one unit of winding because sine x undergoes one oscillation as we go across space. And so as time goes forward, our incoming soliton universe comes up. And indeed, a piece of it inflates to the far future. But unfortunately, the exterior of the soliton core thinks it wants to roll down the potential and fall back into anti-de Sitter space and recollapse. So that's exactly what the exterior of the soliton does. Falls down, recollapses back into anti-de Sitter space. And so if you think about this in string terms, what you really have is coming in from the past, small scale factor, one wound string, one anti-wound string, and classically those oppositely wound string pairs annihilate, and this thing that's inflating up to the far future actually has zero winding number. And so I think this is a way of generating naturally some initial condition where a piece of the field is perched at the top of the potential. But will it sort of eternally sit there? I don't think so. It'll fall off once you start incorporating quantum fluctuations. Another thing you can think about is de Sitter entropy. You might say, what de Sitter entropy? If I think about two dimensions, angular spatial spheres are a pair of points. So what are we talking about when we talk about the area of the horizon divided by Newton's constant? Well, we'll get to that. But another route to entropy might be to ask, how many states are there in the quantum theory that are compatible with having eternal de Sitter observers who would have the right to talk about static thermodynamic observables? So I said before that when we're solving the Hamiltonian constraint, well, we want to add up the energy in the Liouville field and the energy in the matter and balance that against the Casimir energy of being in a finite spatial universe to solve the Hamiltonian constraint. And so the lowest matter state, of course, is the matter vacuum. That places a lower bound or a maximum
kind of momentum that you can put into the Liouville field. So there's kind of on the de Sitter potential, there's kind of a lowest state, sort of a bottom. And then when we start populating the matter field with excitations, there's essentially a maximum excitation that we can put into the matter before the field runs into a big crunch at some point in its evolution. And so there, if you like, if there are a finite number of matter states having below a certain energy, namely energy below C over 24, then there are maximum number of states that the system can have compatible with having eternal de Sitter-like observers. So how many such states are there? Well, we just do 1 plus 1 dimensional thermodynamics, otherwise known as the Carty formula. And so if we're looking at states whose energy runs up to C over 24, then the maximum amount of entropy that is embodied in such states is essentially the central charge times that maximum energy, or something on order of some number of order 1 times the central charge of the matter. Now, on the other hand, if we take seriously the notion that angular spheres of space in two dimensions are zero-dimensional spheres, and zero-dimensional spheres are a pair of points, that's perfectly okay, because Newton's constant is, so there are no units here, so just two points. But also Newton's constant is dimensionless in two dimensions. Newton's constant, as we saw before, was just the Liouville coupling. And so if we plug that in to the formula A over 4G, we get a number which is suspiciously close to the number that you get by counting matter states. And I don't understand the factor of 2, but I regard this as an indication that there, again, may be clues to how to think about de Sitter thermodynamics and gravitational thermodynamics more generally by thinking about this sort of toy model. Well, all this would be fairly useless if we didn't have any idea how to construct quantum theory. So let's see how that works. I don't know in general how to construct the quantum theory for some general matter potential coupled to gravity, but at least the pure de Sitter theory, there are some proposals. So what do we want to do? We want to construct some kind of quantum partition function, or maybe even some correlation functions, corresponding to classical geometries that look like this. Either a geometry that's emerging out of some Big Bang and going into an asymptotic de Sitter future, or emerging from an asymptotically de Sitter's past, bouncing and going back out. Okay. Now, from the point of view of conformal field theory, this is just a punctured disk, so the Big Bang is some a boundary condition that specifies a vertex operator in conformal field theory. And the asymptotic de Sitter regions are conformal boundaries. They're boundaries at finite conformal time of the Penrose diagram. So these are what in conformal field theory are called boundary states. And so we have to look in Liouville theory to find the appropriate boundary state that we would call an asymptotic de Sitter region of space-time. Those were handed to us by some very pretty work by the Zamolodchikovs, who built a whole family of states associated to Virasoro representations for Liouville. And the ones we're interested in are built on what are called null vectors in the conformal algebra. If you know what that is, fine. If you don't worry. Anyway, the one that we're going to be interested in is associated with the null vector L minus 1 on the highest weight state vanishes. That's one of the generators of L minus 1 in the conformal algebra is one of the generators of SL2 symmetry. And lo and behold, SL2 symmetry is what we want, because both for anti-de Sitter space in two dimensions and de Sitter space in two dimensions, the isometry group is SO21 or SL2R. So the Zamolodchikovs wanted to use this to make Euclidean anti-de Sitter space, and I want to use it to make Lorentzian de Sitter space. So, for instance, for de Sitter spaces which are asymptotically de Sitter at both ends, what we would want to consider is the partition function on a finite cylinder or annulus. combining a partition function of the matter theory of the ghosts and of the Liouville field. The Zamolodnikovs tell us that the Liouville partition function on the annulus is this. For the ghosts, it's some factor of a Dedekind eta function for the two reparametrizations. And for the matter, I think the correct prescription is to take the boundary state associated to what's called an Ishibashi state in conformal field theory. And so anyway, you plug all of that in, and you have two integrals to do. You have an integral over the conformal height of the annulus or cylinder, and an integral over the momentum running through the Liouville field, essentially how fast it's running and bouncing off the exponential cliff. If you do that, you pick your favorite matter state of a particular energy in the matter system, and you look at this integral. It has a double saddle point, and the saddle is at the value of the Liouville momentum, which satisfies the classical Hamiltonian constraint. And the saddle point in the height of the conformal cylinder is the classical height of the classical solution. So just as you would expect in quantum gravity, there's some fluctuations because it's only a saddle point. The geometry isn't exactly the classical geometry. And there are other states running around than just the highest weight states. But I think this is the appropriate notion of what you would call quantum de Sitter space. And I think it'll be interesting to work out some more of its properties. So having in hand an explicit example of what we would call quantum de Sitter space, we can start testing various proposals which have appeared in the literature as to what we mean by quantum cosmology in a relatively non-trivial setting. So first of all, maybe this is misleading, but we have constructed a quantum theory of 1 plus 1 dimensional de Sitter space, and it's a conventional quantum field theory. Okay? It's not a quantum mechanics of a finite number of degrees of freedom. It does seem to respect or be built on things that respect the usual de Sitter isometries. I think we can argue as to whether it's exactly de Sitter invariant or what that means in the quantum theory, but it exists, and we can ask, in what sense does it respect de Sitter symmetry? You could also start asking questions about Big Bang, Big Crunch scenarios, because after all, we know well in conformal field theory, if we have something propagating down a cylinder, we can always pinch it and ask what that does. This would correspond to looking at the annulus diagram sort of outside of its classical domain of accuracy, namely to impose put a matter states on the boundary which will cause a big crunch to occur at some particular conformal time. And you can do that. It kind of puts the answer in by hand by essentially saying that what comes out up top is what you put in at the bottom. So I don't know what to make of that, but at least it's something you can study concretely in the presence of quantum fluctuations of the geometry. I think maybe this conclusion is a little bit too harsh, thinking about it again last night. Another thing you can do is to look at some other proposals which have been making the rounds of looking at various exotic states that you might couple rather than the natural Euclidean vacuum of matter in the de Sitter space. You might consider some exotic vacuum. And ones that have been proposed are the so-called alpha vacua, where you make some Bogoliubov rotation of the matter fields. And you know, that's a state which you can write down. Unfortunately, it doesn't lie in any natural Virasoro representation, so I don't have any idea how you could ever consistently couple this to the Liouville field and satisfy the quantum constraints of reparametrization invariance. Another thing you could look at is eternal inflation or other sorts of inflationary ideas. And here I have less to say because we haven't constructed the quantum theory. Nevertheless, I can spout off like everybody else. And So, you know, the question that one can raise is, you know, the usual scenario is quantum fluctuations grow to large, make domains. Those domains get large volume, and, you know, so it looks like the universe is proliferating in some extravagant way. You know, what do we make of that? I'm not sure that this, well, other people have said this. I think Hawking mentioned it in a talk, not at this conference, but in this workshop, that there's a question as to how gauge invariant is this picture. And I think an indication is that if we start with any of these sort of benign matter states that we can couple to Liouville theory or Liouville-like theories, that there's a finite entropy of those states at any given energy in the matter system. Okay, and so it seems hard for me to reconcile, hard in my mind to reconcile that finite entropy of matter states in the matter-Hilbert space with this arbitrary entropy production that's supposed to go on during this chaotic inflation. And so I think there's some sort of incompatibility there, but it would be nice to see if it really is there and what its nature is. All right, well, I have managed to save time for the allegorical fable. So, as I mentioned, at one point there is this alternate interpretation of two-dimensional cosmology as a string background. And up to now, I've been talking about a single two-dimensional universe and thinking about essentially which is essentially the propagation of a single string. But there is another way of thinking about string theory, which is a field theory of strings. And this was something that was explored 15 years ago in the context of baby universes. And so you can start preparing your rotten tomatoes. I don't know anything at the moment that forces me into this sort of multiverse interpretation of the theory, rather than just thinking about the propagation of a single universe. And until forced to, I can always revert back and say, that's my theory. But if I do want to think about the sort of multiverse interpretation of what's going on, there's a serious problem. Namely, in the string theory interpretation, all of these global de Sitter solutions are tachyons. There's rampant tachyon production. And so what we really need to know is what happens to the cosmological constant, which is the Liouville potential. And at late times, gravity in target space is going to react to it, and where's it going to go? What's the end state? And string theorists don't know, in general, what happens to a theory under closed string tachyon condensation that occurs everywhere in field space. However, certain examples of tachyon, or if you want, cosmological constant backgrounds have been understood in the superstring, in the critical dimension. These were pioneered by Adams, Polchinski, and Silverstein, and studied by a few other groups. And basically what they look like is that you localize the tachyon in a particular region of field space. That's the only place where the tachyon appears, so that's the only place where there will be a cosmological constant. And everywhere else in field space, there will be just ordinary non-tachyonic string matter. So the picture is, so those examples that were studied have the property that the tachyon condenses, okay? The cosmological constant that appears in that region of field space relaxes away, and what you have at late times is an outgoing pulse of radiation, which in baby universe language are a condensate of baby universes. And so in this sort of picture, what's happening is the potential landscape that any given test string would experience depends on when I look at it. Okay, so what the landscape of cosmology looks like depends on the epoch of scale factor that you're choosing to consider. So here's a cartoon of what's going on. You have this unstable defect. It decays into radiation. And so, as I said, the cosmological constant relaxes at finite time or scale factor. And so at large scales, what you have is a whole bunch of FRW universes. And furthermore, because this is a time-dependent background, there is string pair production, or if you like, universe production. And it's rampant, and so you might expect that even if you started off with no universes in the presence of this defect, you would produce lots of them, and so most universes that you would look at would emerge from the region where there's most time dependent. So you sort of emerge from the middle of the landscape where there's some interesting structure. So I don't know if this will be sufficiently interesting scenario for people to overcome their revulsion to baby universe theory. Hard won through lots of work 15 years ago. But here's the allegorical fable. You might wonder if what we're seeing, because as I've tried to indicate along the way, these two-dimensional models mirror the theory we really want to study in a rather non-trivial way. What does string theory look like? Okay, the real string theory, not string theory is the target space of baby universes. The real string theory is something where due to what's usually called the Dein-Seiberg problem, there's a potential landscape, but far away in field space, the cosmological constant is absent. So in this analogy, this complicated landscape that occurs somewhere in the middle of field space is a localized tachyon. And so you might wonder, can it relax somehow? And the same story holds, namely that what this landscape looks like depends on the epoch in which you study it, that it's there in the early universe at small scale, but once baby universes have condensed somehow, it goes away, and at late times, the cosmological constant is zero. And that's certainly what the two-dimensional examples do. So I cribbed this cartoon from Robert Dycraft's 1995 Les Ouches lectures to as a kind of an interesting parallel that we see that things that we would like to study in the real theory are mirrored at a more in a cartoonish level in worldsheet physics. And so before trying to climb Everest, we might want to practice on the foothills and see what we might be able to learn, or at least get some good exercise. Thank you.
So I'm trying to tie together the state counting you were doing a little bit earlier with the sort of picture you ended up with. Is the finite entropy something you're seeing connected with the sitter in the way we're used to? And is this final picture going to allow infinite entropy? And if so, do you have a sort of update of your comment on the
right? So
the current reproducing universes.
Well, so. So if this last scenario is right, then indeed the analog, if you like, I don't think it's really the same scenario as eternal inflation, but it's something very much like it in spirit, is occurring in these models where you don't look at the entropy of a single universe. That at fixed energy is always finite. But the fact that viewed from the target space or from the field space point of view, you have a, if you think of scale factor as time, you have a very rapidly time-dependent background, and that leads to large production of universes, and so it's the entropy of sort of the number of states in the Fock space of universes, which is the entropy production that's happening, not in the study of a single universe.
So you don't see any particular reason to bound that?
No. Well, it'll be bounded in any given model by the length of time over which the tachyon condensation takes place, and so how long you have a cosmological constant around to generate this production.
Although in a richer picture, you can imagine that fluctuating up and down or something. Is it just, are you limited to just this sort of one little run?
Well, so that's a question of cooking up models.
Yeah. Okay.
So this looks like a D greater than 25 string, the Worldsheet theory of a string in D greater than 25. And at least in most of your talk, the space-time fields were fixed. That is, the background fields were fixed, which is the Worldsheet action. And then at the end, when you talk about multi-universes, effectively you're quantizing that.
Yeah.
So it's like you got two choices. Either G string is sort of exactly zero, and you have some kind of extreme limit of string theory, or G string is non-zero, and I guess basically then it's the full string theory, but interpreted from the point of view of life on a string.
Right.
Those are sort of the two choices you're talking about. And in the second case, where you really quantize everything, then the couplings of the people on the string really are fluctuating. That is, you're seeing random couplings, and so you have this extra, this thing we talked about, you know, 15 years ago, this extra variation of the coupling constants of nature beyond just what you get from having many vacua. But I mean, that's what you see happen. I mean, you think we might have to think about that again, that there are random fluctuations of the constants of nature?
If that thought doesn't still repel you, then, I guess to my mind, I would add this to the list of things you might think about if you haven't given up doing physics. That is, if you really want to, construct a reason why we don't just have some arbitrary landscape and lo and behold, we're in some random place which we can't make any predictions about, or at least very minimal coarse predictions that don't really tell us anything interesting. The 800-pound gorilla in our field is the cosmological constant, and we have to hide that somewhere. And so, here's a way of dismantling that gorilla piece by piece, atom by atom. In the real theory, I guess the question is, should we really be thinking about fixing some model, which is what we do, for instance, in ADS-CFT. We have some frozen background, but we have that frozen background in ADS-CFT because we have spatial infinity where we pick some boundary condition and things are locked. But we don't know how ADS-CFT works in low-dimensional closed universes. And so it seems to me the game is still open in the real theory as to how we deal with low-dimensional cosmologies of closed universes. And, is there something really much more dynamical in the game than just picking some frozen background? Do we really explore the landscape? And then how do we explore the landscape?
Yeah, I'm a little confused once you start talking about this multiverse picture about the different notions of time that you're introducing into the picture. So in the initial pictures where you were trying to describe these things in terms of various classical cosmologies, there were natural notions of time for observers sitting inside of those universes and interpreting the physics according to some sort of Hamiltonian evolution inside the universe. But the notion of time you were invoking when you talked about the multiverse was something completely different.
Yeah.
That doesn't really have any correspondence with the internal time. The internal time of an observer in de Sitter space is, the proper time is the time of the static coordinate system and doesn't have anything to do with the global evolution of the scale factor, right? So I'm not sure what it would mean for that observer if this tachyon decayed, and I wondered whether you had some idea.
It has a little bit of the spirit of what Hawking was saying yesterday, that where he was talking about sort of two universes going off to large scale factor and drawing an inconsistent arrow of time from that picture. So I think the way I would like to phrase it is that the thing that physically we call the arrow of time is the the direction where the scale factor is growing and entropy is increasing and so on. And you know, so at late times there might be some good notion of time which is tied to what's going on in a given universe as flow out to large positive scale factor.
That definition of time makes sense as long as you're not in a de Sitter region. Once you get into the de Sitter region.
Right. So it has to end at finite time.
No. There's a static observer whose time goes on forever and doesn't see
if de Sitter space persists forever, yes.
Yeah, but forever in which time?
Well, in this scenario it doesn't, it's not forever in either time.
Okay, I'd like to.
Okay, I've got a question over here.
You drew a picture in which you had an annulus diagram, mm-hmm. and you said it would pinch off. Have you thought about, like, in type 1 theory, including unoriented universes would cancel that kind of balanced divergence?
No, I haven't. There are certainly other interesting things you could try, I just sort of took the simplest models that I could think of and said, you know, can I model things that people have talked about in cosmology? Certainly there are other things you could look at.
May I ask you, what are the methods that you use allow you to study inflationary perturbations, quantum perturbations, and most importantly, the back reaction on the metric?
Okay. So, the first problem that one has to solve in heading in that direction is to really define a good set of gauge invariant observables in terms of which you're going to measure the perturbations, because in two dimensions you essentially have one scalar field in the scale factor, but you have two constraints from the Hamiltonian and the momentum. So sort of gauge invariance is sufficiently powerful to do whatever you want within reason to the scale factor and also specify what's going on in one of the matter fields. So physical perturbations are some combination of at least two matter fields and the scale factor. Okay, so you could fix a gauge, say surfaces of constant Liouville field and constant inflaton, and then matter perturbations are what's going on in some other matter field. So that maybe is a little bit less realistic relative to what people do in higher dimensions.
The reason why I'm asking is that one cannot see eternal inflation if one does not study back reaction of quantum fluctuations on the metric and on the speed of expansion of the universe.
Yeah, I would still want to ask this same entropy question of if I organize the Hilbert space of this two-dimensional field theory by what's going on in terms of matter energy. How is the control growth of entropy of that field theory compatible with this rampant energy production in the chaotic scenario?
In 4D we think that we know the answer. In 2D we don't know.
Okay.
We have time for one more question.
So, if I understand correctly, you're using a time-like Liouville theory for your conformal field theory analysis. Mm-hmm. Do you have the analytic continuation from the space-like Liouville theory, which is what Zamolodchikov studied, under control?
I just blithely analytically continued with the usual attitude that until I encounter a problem, I will assume that it's okay.
Because we know that the analytic continuation for the boundary Liouville theory in the context of Taquian condensation has caused people a lot of grief. And there the naive continuation doesn't work. So there might be actually some very interesting things coming up when you
Grief indeed arises when you try to construct correlation functions So that's, again, the problem associated with this sort of universe production in this multiverse interpretation. I think the single string propagation, as far as I can see, has no corresponding difficulty.
Well, at the very least, there was a paper in literature which pointed out that actually there are two different analytic continuations for Liouville theory. Paper by Chamaris.
Yeah, that I'm not aware of. Okay, thank you.
All right, well, let's thank Emil again for a lovely talk. And this